Welcome to the Scuffed Podcast. I'm Adam Bells in Minneapolis. With me is Greg Velasquez in Des Moines. We talk about U.S. men's soccer. A second or third choice USA side defeated El Salvador 6-0 on Wednesday in Fort Lauderdale. And while some would say there's nothing to be gleaned from this, we are going to get into it a little bit. Greg, you ready?
Yeah, let's get to gleaning.
Actually, three bits of news before we get to that. The first one's very bad. Richie Ledesma fell awkwardly on his right knee yesterday in his first Europa League start for PSV Eindhoven. And as many of us feared, the news came out this morning that he tore his ACL. He'll be out for 6 to 9 months, which means he almost certainly misses all of the action this summer. And, you know, probably is pretty discouraged right now. He's a 20-year-old who had just been breaking in with PSV and starting to look comfortable as a first teamer. So that's a huge setback. Pretty sad. We're all sad.
Yeah. Tough news for the kid, and I'm sure he, you know, I'm sure what something else that's going through his head right now is how big of a blow that is to his eventual U.S. men's national team chances for this cycle. Because even when you make it back from that injury next season, at that point you'll have missed all. There's just so many opportunities for everybody at on the fringes going into this summer, that everyone's going to get their chance to sort of stake their claim, and to sort of be not denied that opportunity now is going to be a tough one to overcome, just because, it's going to be, we won't be able to take as many risks on the roster as we get into September in the actual World Cup qualifying. Although maybe if we keep knocking teams out 5-6-0, we will be willing to take those risks, but it just feels like the squad might start to be sort of set at that point. Just again, way fewer games to audition.
Yeah, I guess I would agree that it's a setback in that respect as well, of course. But he's, how well would he have to perform for PSV Eindhoven in the 2021-22 season to get into a roster and qualifying? I don't know, that'd be a question for Greg Berhalter, I guess, but. But he does some things that I don't think we have a lot of players who do. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll say this, though. I think our pool is going to make it tough for him, in the sense that I think that over the course of the summer, we're going to have a lot of high performing players who are performing well for the national team filling those spots. So it's not going to be like we just have these filler placeholder type guys. I think we're going to be playing at a level where, you know, we already know we have Pulisic and Morris and Reyna as, you know, potentially three out of our four wingers. If Ledesma's going to be in one of those sort of inside winger places, the competition will be fierce for that last spot. And I think it's going to be going to a player who is playing really well for both club and country by then. So that's what I mean about it being really difficult to, I think this team will be difficult to break into for someone who hasn't had a lot of chances to play for the national team.
And those tournaments, the Gold Cup, the Olympics, presumably, and Nations League this summer are a chance to sort of put a flag in the ground, as they say.
Yeah. That's where I think it's going to happen. So, hopefully Ledesma does come back and make it apparent that he needs to get that shot. That's what we're all hoping for.
Yeah, definitely. Some good news is Weston McKennie scored an absolutely gorgeous goal for Juventus at the Camp Nou in a 3-0 win over Barcelona. I'll describe it briefly. He received the ball at the top of the box. He knocked it wide to Cuadrado. Cuadrado, first time, chips it right at the penalty marker, pretty much. And McKennie leapt into the air, went horizontal, and scissor kicked it right by the goalkeeper's ear at pace.
Emphatically.
Yeah. It was fun to watch. Fun to watch him be congratulated by Cristiano Ronaldo. And I mean, you're not a fan of Ronaldo. I mean, he's still one of the greatest soccer players of all time. And that whole, like his whole, it's clear that McKennie is a part of that team that is valued and he's liked, you know?
Yeah, and it's I feel like his willingness to just do something like that, not that it was like showboating or anything, that was just the correct technique in the moment to get off your feet and smash it. But it's great, and we already know Weston is willing to do these kinds of things. We got to see him attempt a bicycle kick in the Gold Cup last summer. So
yeah.
He's just that kind of player who's not going to be afraid of the ambitious type of stuff. Something we'll revisit later in the episode, actually, I think.
Awesome. And then something you mentioned earlier, Tim Weah scored his first goal since the Nixon administration.
It was definitely his first goal since I believe he was in a Celtic uniform.
Yeah, which explains why he didn't celebrate very effusively. Class, it must be said. But yeah, it was a nice goal. Well-taken left-footed volley off a corner kick that squibbed out to him. First time. Loved it. Good for Timmy. Should we get to glean in on this El Salvador match?
Yeah, let's glean it up. You mentioned that a lot of people saying not much to take from this game. I fully subscribe to that newsletter. We compared the Panama game in November to sort of a Gold Cup group stage game, and I think this fits that same bill where we're just going to be dominant, and nothing that sort of happens in this game should give you much to conclude for games that are going to happen in World Cup qualifying, especially games that happen on the road in World Cup qualifying. You might remember we breezed through the 2019 Gold Cup group stage. I think we had like a 12-2 goals against ratio, and then promptly struggled our way through the knockouts and the rest of the calendar year. So we definitely want to be careful saying that, you know, this definitely means corners have been turned. But it was fun to watch as it happened. And I feel like that's the kind of ephemeral feeling you get from these friendlies.
Yeah. Why was this El Salvador team so bad, do you think?
I don't know. I'm morbidly curious about it, though. And I kind of do want to do like a full autopsy on this particular game, even if there's no real long-term takeaways. And like the first thing I want to know is if there's any suspicious betting activity on the first half scoreline.
Yeah, it was just so easy. I mean, from the, what was it, the 15th minute to the 25th minute, something like that. 16th minute to the,
from the start,
26th minute, yeah.
Yeah, I know that's when the goals were scored. But from the start, it was insane how open El Salvador were. Like, it was insane that they were playing that way. This is the same back six, roughly, plus goalkeeper. So the back line plus two holding mids that they've had out for like their last 9 or 10 games, including like a decent Gold Cup outing where they beat Jamaica. I'm sorry, they beat Curacao and then they tied Jamaica in the Gold Cup group stage and didn't give up a goal to either team. So it's not like this is like a super, you know, terrible defense. So it's nice that we made them look terrible, but a lot of that was how they chose to play.
Somebody, one of those center backs is having a big payday, is what you're saying.
Well, they did start a different right back, and we'll talk about that later. But it was more the approach. They played kind of like Cuba in the Nations League game that we played in the U.S. Like, they came out in this incredibly high line. The high line wasn't organized or disciplined in any way, and they had zero pressure that they applied to the U.S. players when we were on the ball, so we just got to pick out whichever runner we wanted to, whenever we wanted to. Timing didn't have to be an issue. Like, it was just the easiest thing in the world.
Yeah. And I would say in those first 15 minutes, our lack of sharpness in the attacking third is the only reason we didn't score, you know?
Yeah, we still got in plenty of times.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Let's go with the timeline. Ready for that?
Yeah. The timeline's going to be a lot of good attacking chances.
I thought we came out looking energetic, which, you know, that's, I know that some people are like, well, that's just silly talk. But, you know, Yule wins the ball high and draws a foul 30 seconds in. I think Leggett won the ball on the sideline a couple minutes later. So our midfield trio of Yule, Aronson, and Leggett was, you know, they had some characteristics of a good engine room that they were like on, they were on it. They were ready to get after it.
Not passive. We clearly weren't coming out passive, yeah. Which we don't expect to really ever do anymore. Wasn't the case last year, but this is definitely the new normal.
Yeah, which is nice. Let's okay. We're going to skip a lot of the stuff I wrote down here because my editor Greg has nixed it. But let's start with the 1:55 mark, 1:55. Decent idea over the top from Yule, who kind of receives the ball around the center circle and then drifts with a guy on his back to his right, and then he plays a ball over the top for Araujo, who's wide open. But the weight on the ball isn't right, and it skips out of bounds before Araujo can get to it.
Yeah, and this is basically like an indicator of what the entire game was going to be, where this was just our back three of McKenzie, Long, and Yule. I'm calling it a back three. Can I kind of talk about our shape a little bit?
Yeah, please do. Maybe toss the lineup in there while you're at it.
Sure. For anyone who doesn't know from a couple of days ago, it was Bill Hamid in goal. It was Long and McKenzie at center backs. McKenzie on the left, Long at the right. I wasn't sure if we were going to see that. I wondered if McKenzie was going to get a tryout at right center back to sort of see if he could partner with Brooks, but he got played on the left to sort of be the John Brooks, essentially. Mm-hmm. Vines at left back, Araujo at right back. Yule, Aronson, Legette, as we mentioned, were kind of the engine room of three center mids. And then we had our front three of Akinola up top, Mueller on the left, and Paul Arriola on the right. So Arriola deemed fit for the start, got exactly 60 minutes. So we assume that was kind of a planned sub, but that was the lineup. What was different about this lineup and the way we'd been playing for the rest of 2020, all three games of it, was that we didn't kind of get into that sort of that attacking band of five in this game. Like, it was a really distinct, like, Vines and Araujo both sort of held back quite a bit into, like, this. Our back four was just visible almost all the time, where it was, like, a back four and then Yule, and then you had Legette and Aronson above Yule, and then the front three. So it was basically, like, a 4-1-2-3 is how I'd describe it in possession. And we were in possession almost the entire game.
Yeah. Okay.
So getting back to this this delivery from Yule, so this was the entire first half was there was El Salvador just left one guy up high with no help, and he wasn't particularly interested in applying much pressure. So you just had McKenzie and Long and Yule for the most part just knocking the ball around the three of them until eventually one of them would take another touch, like head up the whole time, and then just sort of float a ball to one of the runners.
Yeah.
And this particular ball was to Araujo. Araujo would get forward a little bit more. Vines almost never did. I don't think we ever hit a ball upfield to Sam Vines, but we did hit a few to Araujo. But the crazy thing here was just how unprepared El Salvador were for it. So because of our front three staying a little bit more narrow, El Salvador's left back stayed like tight to Arriola, who was pinched in centrally. Mm-hmm. And they just left the full left channel like, El Salvador's left midfielder was in no way interested in tracking Araujo. So this was like a sign of things to come that we could have hit Araujo anywhere we wanted in the entire final third. And we just overhit it and the ball ran out of play.
Yeah.
But that was what was available to us basically all game.
Well, I do want to get back to that a little bit, but let's do a couple more things from the timeline. I want to mention in the fourth minute, Araujo had a poor clearance, and this was one of a handful of poor moments from him in the game. The other that I noticed being a very bad giveaway in the 70th minute, which we're not even going to get to in this timeline. But Araujo did have his bad moments. I guess that's why I bring that up. 5:15, Araujo hits a nice ball up the wing. I'd like to describe this, what happened here. We had on both sides, the tucked in winger and the dual eight on that side were both able to run into the corner to get on a ball from Araujo. And I don't know how they decided who went, but that seemed to utterly confuse El Salvador. Like they were not able to figure out who to track on that run into the corner. And then both of our fullbacks, I mean, they each played a ball like this multiple times, just a curling ball on the ground to the runner who's coming from the inside. And we just cut them open repeatedly in that specific way. So that you talked about the lofted ball from one of our back three. There was also just the ball from the fullback down the line.
Yeah, just sort of hit it in the window, either between the fullback and the line or even between the fullback and the center back. And I'll even I kind of want to push back a little bit on this being like a pattern. I mean, it was a pattern that we hit this ball, but it's, when I'm thinking like patterns of play, I'm thinking of like coordinated movements. And the thing about this game was we didn't have to really coordinate any movement. So in this case, we had that back four structure again, and we're just knocking it around with no pressure. And Araujo has it, and he can look up. And there isn't like any confusion about who should go with Areola from El Salvador and who should go with Aaronson. Like Aaronson was basically just static, and it was as simple as Areola like doing a body feint to come back to get the ball from Araujo and then just taking off upfield. So as much as we love to talk about like the details of tactics and as much as we talk about Berhalter and sort of his systems and all this, I mean, sometimes it's as simple as hit the ball behind their back line and then run after it. And that was like a lot of what this game was.
Yeah. I mean, the timing was good on that, on this particular play or whatever, but yeah, it's mostly just the fullback wasn't fast enough to, or, you know, committed enough to break it up. So in this case, Areola got on the end of it, and then he played a ball across that was easily cut out. Just a poor ball.
Yeah, poor ball because he had Akinola. Akinola had easy inside position because he outran the center backs into that space once the ball went to Areola. So any ball that's in between Akinola and the goal is tapped in.
Yeah.
And not to say that you hit those 100% of the time, but, you know, as far as the game, chances like that existing, they're rare to come by.
We need to make the most of them.
It's the ones that we want to make the most of them.
Okay. 6:30, line-breaking pass from McKenzie to Chris Mueller. Is it Mueller or Mueller?
I'm going to say Mueller in this instance, and then I'm going to say Mueller later on.
Well... Mueller, it was to Mueller. He tried to do a little combination with Leggett and gave it away. But that was a nice line-breaking pass from McKenzie, I thought.
Yeah, we'll come back to this and for a couple of reasons, because I like that pass from McKenzie, and we'll talk about... Well, let's talk about the Mueller giveaway real quick. So ball's coming to Mueller, and it was Leggett kind of over next to him, and he tried to hit a one-touch ball behind the back line to Leggett. But... the center back ran with Leggett and sort of bumped him off his run. And the right back, who dropped as the pass was arriving to Mueller, and was able to just sort of clean it up. And we'll talk about why I went into that much detail later.
Okay. Right at about the 10-minute mark, Yule diagonal to Araujo, who gets a good pullback off after some hanky-panky in the corner. And then Aaronson's shot is blocked by the goalkeeper, I think.
So I have this one marked because it is like the best example. I think we took a throw in at like the 9-minute mark and then just knocked it around our back line again for a full minute of leisurely as you like before Araujo picks his head up and just hits a really good ball. Like he hits a great ball into Aaronson, and I think Aaronson is he hit this one to Araujo. So yeah, I get this one. But it was just so uncomplicated.
Yeah. Araujo kind of received it with his chest, popped it up, kind of drifted into the corner, and then beat the guy who was marking him to get the pass off. And it was a dangerous chance, I thought. At the 12-minute mark, a nice moment from Aaronson. He flicks on a little scoop pass from Mueller. I thought this was one of Aaronson's better moments in the game. Areola is just a split second late to get to it for a chance. So it's Mueller scoop pass to Aaronson. Aaronson's got a guy on his back. He just flicks it on with his head. And Areola might have gotten to it if you were a little bit more on his toes, but might not have anyway.
So the reason I liked this one is because this was pretty much like our first real combination sequence. This was the first sequence we had that wasn't just that sort of ball over the top. So it was 12 minutes in, so it took us 12 minutes to really do this. And I'm not even really blaming the guys. Like if they're giving it to you, if they're playing that high line and you're much faster and you're not being pressured on the ball, like just do this. It's a December friendly. Like go get your fucking numbers in the box and score goals. But it was good to see this kind of a sequence, and it started with a nice Ewell penetrating run up the middle and a nice ball from Ewell to Aaronson sort of in that pocket. I'm sorry, to Mueller. And then Mueller. Yeah. And then Mueller scooped it to Aaronson. So it was that was the good, like, coordinated movement that I was happy to see.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's get to the goals. And it's the next five items are going to be goals.
they all came at once. Yeah. It was pouring.
16-10 is when this sequence started. Vines plays that curling ball on the ground up the line for Mueller, that curling ball I was talking about earlier. And Mueller was just faster than the Salvadoran right back. Nothing fancy with our movement in this case. So I'll agree with you there. And Mueller bowls his way into the box, kind of jumps over a sliding challenge, skitters the ball across the penalty area. It's ushered towards the penalty marker by a deflection.
Yeah.
And then Areola just sort of gets to it, takes a touch, and left foots it right over the keeper for the opener. A scrappy goal, but I thought it was a nice pass from Sam Vines.
Good pass from Vines, but yeah, it's just a very forgiving situation where we can kind of miss at several moments in the sequence and not really have it affect our ability to score goals. Awesome that Paul Areola gets the first goal, yeah. I should add.
Yeah.
In his first real game back from his 9-month ACL.
Exactly.
Absence. So, but you know what I mean? Like, we get the ball into Mueller. He takes a touch that actually goes into the sliding defender, which isn't ideal. Like, you'd rather not take it into that. And then the defender puts it back off of Mueller's foot, and it stays in his path. And then it's like the deflected cutback that I think he was trying to split to Akinola, but it gets deflected out into this no man's land where obviously we're going to win the race to that because no one from El Salvador is trying to fill that space.
Yeah.
Which we'll see that kind of come up again on several of these other goals. And even then there was like some uncertainty between Areola and Akinola, this hesitation about who's going to go for it. And that's not going to cost us either because we have plenty of time to have Akinola be like, all right, I will defer. You hit this, and Areola sets his feet and smashes in a fantastic finish.
Yeah. Yeah, it didn't look like a real international goal for some reason. But I kind of want to make fun of the right back for El Salvador a little bit here because it's funny to watch him on this play. It looks like somebody's little brother stole one of the jerseys and is snuck his way onto the field because he's just a second late. He's always a little bit behind. Kind of like a come on, guys, wait for me sort of vibe from him. And go ahead.
He'll show up the same way on like the next three goals. And he's the one odd man out from this El Salvador lineup that wasn't part of like their Gold Cup or Nations League lineups. I think he got like a 2-minute time wasting sub in the Gold Cup. Their starting right back subs in the 38th minute for him. Tamakis comes in for him. And they don't exactly shut us down after that, but then it looks more like what you'd normally expect for an overmatched team. Like, they're overmatched, but they're not just like constantly pulling the ball out of the back of their net. So they were able to plug the dike a little bit.
Yeah. Okay, 19:20, 19 minutes, 20 seconds, we get our second goal. McKenzie plays it through the lines to Mueller. It's very similar to that time where he couldn't get it to Leggett. This time he combines with Leggett, who breaks free and behind from the channel and then crosses it for Io Akinola. Much better cross than the one from Areola earlier. Io's shot is blocked by the onrushing keeper. It spills to Yule outside the box, who then just kind of slips it to Mueller, who pauses, kind of similar to the way Areola paused earlier, and tucks it into the far corner from about the penalty marker. 2-0. Nice, right. Nice finish from Mueller, too.
Yep, good finish. And this was another one of those really good, like, I was happy to see this kind of combination. Happy to see McKenzie's ball under the feet was really clean. And in this case, the right back who was in a 2v1, and it was Leggett and Mueller again on him, he didn't have as much help from the center back. But this time, he actually chose to, like, take two steps out towards Mueller, forward. And so then Mueller's, I don't know if it's a blind ball into Leggett or if he's just anticipating that movement for the defender. But then it's incredibly effective to slip him in behind. And off we go. So I was really happy about that. Great cross from Leggett. I thought this was a really tidy bit of combination play, which is, again, I'm all about this combination play and these coordinated movements and sequences. So that one was nice to see. But again, once more, El Salvador, no urgency to fill that space that Mueller ended up scoring from.
Yeah, he had a lot of time to sort of look around, survey the scene, and then put it in the corner. 22-0-0.
Either way, though, we love debut goals. So anybody scoring on their debut, anyone scoring coming back from injury, the more the merrier.
Yeah, and Mueller, you know, Mueller, I think, got a lot of the headlines from this game. And this is an example of him, I think, doing something really nice, especially in the build-up. You know, that one-touch pass to Legette. It's not rocket science, but it is, like you said, it's a nice combination play. It's good to see. And right at the 22nd minute, third goal came, a simple transition moment, and Aronson passed, kind of just like a ball, bouncing ball in the air, falls to Aronson, and he passes it to Legette, who knifes through the buttery El Salvadoran defense and chips the goalkeeper with the help of a nice deflection, and it's 3-0.
So this one was, for everyone who suffered through the 2017 qualifying cycle, this was Costa Rica's first goal against us in New York City, where it was like their goalkeeper on the ball. They were all spread out like they were going to try to like play it on the floor somewhere, but instead he hits the long ball, and I think it might be Yule hits the header right to like Aronson's feet, so Aronson has it. And it was just like with the U.S. and our center backs in that game against Costa Rica, El Salvador just like never closes the gap that they'd spread out for the initial kick. And that's how Legette just is able to receive it at like the edge of the circle and run 55 yards uncontested to chip the keeper.
Yeah, it was like he got played in behind one of the central midfielders, and then there was nobody in front of him between him and the goal.
There were people between him and the end line, but they were all like outside of the width of the box.
Too easy, long story short, and that's when it started to feel for me like, oh boy, this might not be.
In isolation, it's still a really good pass from Aronson to Legette to slip him in there. It's just usually that's too key an attack not to actually get the guy running at the goalkeeper.
Yeah. Aronson gets an assist on that play, which is kind of funny. 24-30, another goal, big switch from Mueller to Areola. So Mueller switches it from the left side all the way to the right side to Areola. Areola dribbles into a little bit of a cul-de-sac just outside the box and then taps it back to Araujo. Araujo sets himself feeling not 1 ounce of pressure and hits a sweet cross back over to Mueller, who thumps it in at the back post with his head. Again, they're the right back just a second late. Very little brother-like.
Great diving header finish. We love diving headers. Just to give Araujo full credit here, this sequence, if you want to call it a sequence, it actually started with him and his really good defensive contribution on the night, where he chased back a guy into the box and took like one of the few times El Salvador touched the ball in our box. Araujo would chase the guy down and made a little tackle. The guy went down feigning contact, but I don't think it was even close.
Yeah.
And then we proceeded to just sort of walk the ball. It wasn't like a quick transition. El Salvador certainly hadn't committed numbers forward. We just walked the ball up kind of unopposed until it gets to Mueller, who hits that really nice cross-field switch. And then from there, it looked a lot like Ledesma's cross against Panama, where he just had all the time in the world to pick out his guy in the box and hit it.
Yeah. And then in 26:40, so just over 2 minutes later, Areola picks a guy's pocket in the center circle, a kind of a Benny Hill type moment for that guy.
I had it as Rico Clarkish. Is that too much?
I don't think it's too much. He finds Aronson in transition in behind, so now we have basically a 2v1 against the keeper, with a defender trailing between them. Aronson squares it to a wide open Mueller, who squares it back, probably to Aronson, is what he was
intending.
And Akinola just comes in and pokes it home before it gets to Aronson. 5-0.
Yeah, Akinola saying 2v1, not on my watch. This is 3v1 territory, yeah. Friends. Debut goal. It was great that all these goals did like come with some additional meaning too. So it's not just pounding on El Salvador. Though again, once we schedule the game, pound away. But it felt like there were a lot of feel good moments to the ball hitting the net.
Yeah. So then we got another goal. This one created by Legette, who had a nice evening. He assisted Aronson later in the match. Aronson's goal was ushered in by a fortunate carom. It might have gone in anyway, but let's not dilly-dally here.
No, I got to dilly-dally on this one, Wells. Okay. Just because I've got to give, otherwise I don't know if we'd even mention Marco Farfán, but this came on, it was actually like a nice little piece of play from him where Aaron Long, it was a restart in our defensive half near the right sideline. And Aaron Long chose to hit like a 55-yard cross-field ball to Farfán, which is in the air for a long time, which gives El Salvador a lot of time to kind of run at him. So a chance for a guy on his national team debut to have a nervy moment and maybe give the ball away. But he settled it nicely and then actually hit like a clever little ball to get it out of his feet to set us away to end up with Aronson scoring his goal.
Okay. And then, I mean, Legette had some nice moments in that sequence too, right? Like, didn't he do a little give and go? Was it with Farfán?
No, it was Muller.
Okay.
Muller had he just kind of gave it to Muller and then just continued his run. Legette did. And then Muller had a nice, you know, finesse ball out into Legette's path. Legette did his little body feint and completely lost the guy. And then set up Aronson, who was just, again, all alone in the penalty spot.
Yeah. Yep. He put it through someone's legs, I think, and it bounced into the goal. I see one other mysterious timeline item here.
Okay. So I didn't want to have to do this right away, but like I had a real problem with Chris Muller in this game, and it came in the 68th minute when Araujo plays. At this point, Akinola had been moved to the flank, and nothing had changed. We could just hit a long ball behind their back line, and now it was Akinola beating everyone to it. So Araujo plays Akinola behind. Mm-hmm. Akinola, all the time in the world, hits this really high looping ball to the far post, and Chris Muller, somehow in a 6-0 game, does not attempt the bicycle kick that Weston McKennie would have attempted and scored. And for me, it's unacceptable. Like, that is a lot of people putting Chris Muller in their winger depth chart for the U.S. And as far as I'm concerned, like, that's a 2-year ban.
He's on probation.
2-year ban minimum.
Should have gone for the that overhead kick, Chris.
It was tough to watch.
Yeah. It makes me think, like, would somebody from Germany ever go for an overhead kick like that? Or would they just play the high percentage ball back across with their head? Not that we need to be Germany. I'm just curious.
So I'm like now trying to weigh the math in my head about whether the overhead kick is technically the optimal play. From that angle, it's close. It's real close. He wasn't like right on the end line. It was set up. It would have been so easy to like time it. It was.
You're disappointed.
I mean, it's not called the pragmatic game, Bells. It's called the beautiful game.
I'm watching. Greg and I are on video with each other, which no one else is going to see. But he's really, really frustrated right now.
Why do we even go out there? Why does anyone go out there and kick a soccer ball to begin with? And it's for that exact moment.
Well, you are heard on this podcast, Greg. Let's talk about some players. Unless you got any other sort of wrap up thoughts on the timeline.
That was the timeline.
Okay. I have some notes on each of the starters. I think Farfán deserves mention because he got to play. You know, he's had his struggles in his club situation.
Let's put Kellen Acosta in that deserves mention too, just because it was nice to see him take the field.
For sure. Same All right. Probably even nicer with Acosta because he was he was a men's national team regular. No, 3 years ago, 2 years ago.
Yeah, all through 2018.
All right, so starting at the top, Akinola got his goal that we mentioned. I didn't think he looked bad. I didn't think he looked great. There was so much joy on the wings that he almost didn't have anything to do other than show up in the box.
Yeah, we were able to even float some of those balls over the top to him centrally.
Which is so weird.
And he did okay with them. I mean, he didn't get any of the high profile chances on them that some of the other guys did. And when you score 6 goals, you know, the highlights are going to be the goals, not the time that Akinola hit a shot over the crossbar. But he got in a couple times. We didn't play his feet very much at all. I think on my timeline, it was like the 20th minute was the first time we hit a ball into Akinola's feet.
Really?
When we did hit it into his feet, it was almost always coming from Aaron Long. So that was kind of a cool dynamic. I don't know if it's just something I noted, it was always Aaron Long hitting it into Akinola's feet. It tended to be Mark McKenzie hitting it into Mueller's feet. Mm. And then we basically never hit it into Ariola's feet.
Interesting. Maybe McKenzie and Akinola have some kind of beef. No, I'm just kidding.
But yeah, it's just a very... just that stark contrast between what we were doing with Gio Reyna and even what we were doing with Ulianis and Ariola back in January. We just weren't looking for that ball in the half space because, again, partly because it was so easy to just hit it between the back line and the box and run after it.
Right. Okay. Mueller got all the headlines, scored two nice goals, and was credited with two assists. I think he deserves a look with the full national team, I guess. You could almost say that for several people.
Yep.
But, you know, he's definitely in the mix as a winger.
Yeah, there's no way he'll miss out on January camp. And so if he looks good in January camp, then, and even if he just looks average in January camp, I'm guessing he has a place on one of the two senior teams this summer, whether it's A team or the B team. We still don't know how they're going to split up the A team and the B team for each event, but I would imagine Mueller is going to be in uniform.
Ariola, I think I'm really happy to see him back, and I do think he does a lot of some things well, but I just don't know if he's good enough in the attacking third. And we've been over this territory on this podcast a few times, but I don't know. What do you think? Just give him a mulligan because it's his first time back?
Well, we have plenty of data to work off of on Ariola from all of the times he's played before, and I don't think he's in any way a new player. I don't think he's I doubt he's worse than he was before, but I mean, we know what he is. It's that work rate thing. You literally can't hear someone talk about Ariola without them talking about what his work rate is and what he offers on the defensive side of the ball. And I think we've made that point too, that if he does stay in the full strength 23, it's probably going to be because we want to have the option to have a defensive minded winger, to use in certain situations. Or he'll be just a depth guy who, you know, when our other guys are inevitably injured, Ariola is going to be the old standby. He's reliable. We know what we're getting from him. So Berhalter said he'll play he still has a big role to play for the national team. I don't think that was just lip service. I feel like that's probably what his role will be.
I'm fine with it. He seems like a great teammate, and his lack of cutting edge in the final third is really my only criticism of his game. Aronson, I thought he did a few nice things, but overall was pretty unconvincing. Do you disagree with me?
No, I don't. I think a lot of the guys end up with like better grades than maybe they would otherwise because of the frequency of our attacks. So you're going to remember a few things that he did that stand out because we had so many chances to do things, if that makes sense. And it's the same phenomenon with all the other weak opponents, or even especially it crops up in youth tournaments where it's just an attacking drill. It's a 90-minute attacking drill. So, you know, he's going to have a couple of nice passes like slipping Legette in or his little scooped ball. But we got to at some point start to say, all right, but what percentage of his attempts really sort of came off? And not to say that he was bad, but just to say that he wasn't the cheat code.
No. And I thought, you know, it's not just that Mueller scored the two goals and got the two assists. It's, you know, in combination, he was, I thought, pretty good on the left side. Well, I don't know if I want to go that far, but he did have some moments of good combination. So did Aronson. Aronson had a lot of giveaways, a lot of times where he didn't, measure the timing of the moment very well or something.
And he doesn't take the ball as often as the other guys we've now seen play in that role. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Like he didn't get on it very often. Yeah.
Yeah. I just mean like when El Salvador have the ball or if there's a little bit of a scrap, like he's not the guy who wins the scraps the way that we were winning those scraps in November. And I know I don't think too many people are saying Aronson's ahead of McKenny or Aronson ahead of Musa if Musa chooses the U.S. But that's where you start to see like the value of those guys and the fact that when the ball is near them and an opponent, like so often it was McKenny and Musa coming away with it. And Aaronson is not really that way. Aaronson does get knocked off of his spot quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I think somebody who criticizes Aaronson a lot on Twitter put a clip out there of him, you know, him giving the ball away in the corner, and then he tries to win the ball back, chasing back, and he gets ragdolled off the ball. And I know that kind of felt more like his night in a nutshell than anything else to me. And some folks in our Slack channel were joking about how when he scored his goal, it's almost like he did everything he could to miss that shot.
was that the word? The
The people who said that, but it was funny.
No, and again, I'm not trying to trash any of the guys. I mean, even though we're pointing out a lot of like the deficiencies that were present from the opponent in this game that contributed to goals, like Aaronson's still firmly in the picture, I think, for our 23. So it's just a matter of like I want to at some point see that, and I'm expecting that when he moves in January, we will find out just how effective he can be at the high level.
Yeah, no, that's going to be great for him. To go to RB Salzburg. Next up is Sebastian Legette, who played pretty much the same position as Aaronson. I thought he just looked like himself, a leader of men, a very handsome jack of all trades, an asset on the field in so many ways.
Yes, he did have a bit of a giveaway in the first half. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't.
Like in our box?
No.
God, I don't want to put him on blast for it. No, he was, yeah, I agree. He was basically just like, again, it's that reliability that Areola offers, but with so much more cutting edge in the final third.
Yeah, pretty much. Jackson Ewell. He can ping the ball. So we, you know, there's people putting that on Twitter, how he could hit that ball, that diagonal. He definitely did it, but let's not get carried away, is my opinion. It looks like he was about 50% on those penetrating balls into the attacking third. One of them was a highlight reel pass to Areola, who kind of thwacked it into the stands. And you may have seen that one on Twitter. You also worked hard defensively. You can't fault his effort, but he lost his share of physical battles, similar to Aaronson. So I don't know, he kind of looks like who I think he is, or who I thought he was, which is a decent player who just might not be physically up for a decent international opponent.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I didn't know if other people were kind of catching that he hit a lot of those diagonals, and he really only connected on a couple of them. And that's, for me, that's the big deal. Like if this is your ticket into the team, and you're playing in a game where there's no pressure, and you have such like a wide margin of error for where to put the ball for your team to end up with it. He missed a lot of them. Like he had the highlight one that you talked about to Areola. He actually had another great one to Akinola, I think, before that, probably like 10th minute. But yeah, a ton of those balls either got cut out by the defender's head or like ran to the goalkeeper, or ran out of bounds. So I would have definitely wanted to see him hit a higher percentage of those.
Yeah, especially given the conditions that you described earlier in the game.
Right.
I mean, earlier in the podcast. Yeah, I would say McKenzie, who's the next guy we're going to talk about here, was, you know, he tried line breaking or over the top balls on occasion, and it's like he connected on almost all of them. Super clean.
Yep, that was going to be my next bit.
Sorry, I didn't know that. I didn't know that I was stealing your thunder.
No, it's fine. It's fine. You just take it now.
I thought he looked promising. Super clean on the ball. Wasn't tested defensively, but, you know, when there's no test, you can't fail it. So,
yeah, that was a big thing for me on McKenzie, was that when he did hit those passes, like they were exactly where they needed to go. And it's hard to tell from the angle we're watching from, and usually from the like the zoom, how big those passing windows are that he's hitting through. But he was finding Mueller's feet quite a bit, and it was always like zipped into him. So I don't know. I thought percentage wise, I thought McKenzie was very sharp for the passing that we wanted to see from him. I actually feel like if he has that in him, it's going to be really hard for Tim Ream to stay on the full strength roster. I know Ream's been a mainstay. Mm-hmm. but he's not playing at the moment for Fulham. And his, what he offers, he's never been like the defensive lockdown specialist. He's been somewhat, he's been like a sturdy defensive guy, but he's very much been about that distribution. So if McKenzie can offer that same level of distribution, it feels like that could be, that could be Tim Ream's spot sort of fading out.
Yeah. I'd like to see, you know, to your earlier point, I'd like to see McKenzie as the right center back sometime with Brooks. I don't know. I don't know if we're going to see that, though. Speaking of right center backs, next guy is Aaron Long. I don't have a ton to say about him. I just thought he had a couple of rough moments. Probably drops slightly in the pecking order for me, but who knows? I don't know. He and Miazga, neither Miazga nor he has covered himself in glory of late. And then
I was just going to say, I didn't really notice any real mistakes from Long. He had a couple of long balls that he tried to hit that didn't connect. But I don't know. I thought he was mostly fine in the game. I mean, again, there was really nothing to do.
He overran a dribbler in the corner one time. Forced Araujo to bail him out. But yeah, I mean, I'm not saying he didn't have like a howler or anything.
All right. So my takeaway from Aaron Long actually in this game is just the fact that Aaron Long started. And for me, that means he's still probably Berhalter's top choice at right center back, because if ever it was going to happen, I mean, maybe in an extended January camp, Zimmerman will really beat him out. But given the seasons they just had, where Zimmerman was like the all Big Ten center back, and Aaron Long was, you know, kind of having a down year, allegedly. I don't know that he was really having a down year, but Zimmerman had a tremendous year. And so for Long to still be given the nod as the starter, I think for me that actually solidifies his place in the pecking order as the guy to beat out if you want to be that right center back.
Okay. I'm not going to root against him. Left.
I like all of them. They're such good. That's such a likable back line. With that.
So the next player is Sam Vines. On initial watch, I thought he was really sharp. On a second watch, I sort of don't have a take on Vines.
I was really surprised about that too. He had the really good looking ball into Mueller for the setup on that. But otherwise, like name another thing that he did.
I noticed. I think it was in the third, very early, like in the third minute or fourth minute, something like that. He navigated the El Salvadoran press one time in a way that was kind of nice. Like he chipped a ball from deep to Mueller's feet over a couple of pressing attackers. And in the moment I thought, ooh, that's nice. It's nice to see that from a left back. I still think it's nice, but that's really the only thing I can come up with, you know?
All right. And again, I'm not saying that to be like, he was bad. He should have been doing more. I was just surprised to see like a lot of people being like, I think Vines has a real case to be our starter. And I was just like, I guess I don't know what he's really done here to change his place in the pecking order. But maybe it's just really, again, that sort of confirmation that there is no pecking order at left back at the moment. It is a free for all.
Yeah. I would like to see Vines against a good opponent because I think he is a pretty solid defender. And, you know, if he can play a pass like he did a couple of those passes up the line, I think, then, you know, who knows? Maybe he can compete with Anthony Robinson.
Well, he's Olympic eligible, so he's another one who will definitely be in uniform this summer, assuming Colorado release him. He wasn't in the, am I right? He wasn't part of the Olympic qualifying initially before all of the COVID. I think he was left out of that, and the assumption was that Colorado wanted to keep him for the regular season. And so, but I don't know. Something tells me that teams will play ball for the actual Olympics. MLS teams will play ball for the actual Olympics for the most part. So that's my guess. So if not, we can always just call him up to the Gold Cup.
Yeah. I'd be totally comfortable with that. And then finally, Julian Araujo, he got a lot of praise after the game. I praised him too. I think I continue to praise him. Lots of upside, great athleticism. I saw he had 9 interceptions on the game, like way more. He's very defensively active, and he did play plenty of penetrating passes, including that assist we talked about. But yeah, he's still a bit messy. You know, he had that poor clearance. He had the really, really bad giveaway in the 70th minute, which a better team would punish that severely. So.
But he was much more involved with Vines, and obviously Vines, you know, came out at halftime, so fewer minutes. But Araujo hit a lot more of those balls in behind the back line than Vines was trying to play. You know, frequency wise, there was a lot to outweigh the mistakes he did make. But yeah, he looked a little bit shaky in ways that would definitely be punishable in a CONCACAF World Cup qualifying road match.
Mm-hmm. Bill Hamid.
I don't think he's taken over for Dest just yet.
No, Bill Hamid had nothing to do, and I'd say the subs can all go without comment from us, except for the aforementioned Farfan and Acosta. Soto, I don't know if Soto even touched the ball. Maybe once or twice.
He did. We tried to find his feet a couple of times, but again, very few of our combination attempts up into like the front three's feet really came off. It was mostly just the Mueller goal.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so at some point over the next few weeks, we're going to hear about January camp and get a roster. Still some European soccer going on. We broke the record, the all-time record for Americans in Champions League minutes just in the group stage. I think we shattered it. That's cool. And a bunch of guys going on to the knockout round of Champions League, which picks back up in January, right? January or February.
I think like February 2nd this year, which is an early resumption, but it's going to be cool. And then we get to spend all of January talking about where Mark McKenzie's going to land. Mm.
Yeah. Is there something hot there?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. All right. Everybody have
but
a good...
If clubs were watching that El Salvador game, they're going to add a couple million to that price.
All right. Well, thanks, Greg. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Have a great weekend.